8 years ago, there were some first models, but then there is a wall between different departments. There is some software engineering that know some best practices around creating applications, but data scientists are not aware of it at all. They don't have never heard about CI/CD, never heard about orchestration monitoring. They just only know Jupyter notebooks, and that's it.
Today, I'm joined by Maria Vechtova, who is the co-founder of Marvelous ML Ops, and she's also had an extensive career working in ML engineering and as a senior machine learning engineer, data scientist, data analyst. She's done many different roles in the world of data. And so today I'm excited to be chatting with her and diving all into, as she so rightfully named the company, the marvelous field of MLOps. Maria, welcome to the Data Bytes podcast.
Hi, Sadie. Thank you so much for having me. Really love your podcast. I listen to it when I'm driving in the car. I really like listening to the podcast when I'm driving because it's 1 hour driving or a bit more, so it's perfect timing for the podcast. Really cool to be here.
I'm so happy to hear that because the whole name behind Data Bytes and why we keep them roughly to like 20 to maybe 40 minutes is we did some analysis on when people listen to podcasts, and it is driving in the car, commuting, maybe that's in a subway, metro, doing laundry, cooking, like doing something else, right? And we realized that most people, when they do those tasks, are somewhere between 20 to 30 minutes. So we're like, okay, if we do a long episode, they may not come back to it. So you've just validated our data analysis. And so it's great to have more of the quantitative and qualitative data to how we design the podcast. So thank you for that. So prior to joining in today's conversation, Maria and I were just chatting that we found out we had a commonality between the two of us, which is both had piano teachers that were quite hard on us, right? Quite hard on us by teaching us by smacking your hands or smacking your back in terms of ways of learning. And so we were chatting about how that's not a very conducive way to learn. And so I was lucky enough to have the experience where my parents switched piano teachers, and then I had one that really encouraged me a lot, and I took off. Unfortunately, Maria, it sounds like you had to stay with those piano teachers for your entire piano career, shall I say. But this brings up a great point, which is, I think, the difference a teacher can make, right? Whether that's in something like music or even in technical subjects. So I know we both had a negative or rocky start to our piano career and the teachers that we've had, but has there been a teacher for you in the technology world that really inspired you or made you want to get into this field? Because I noticed your background, or at least your education, is more in economics. So curious of how you made that transition or what inspired you to make that change.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I don't think I can name specifically a teacher. It's more that when I was studying economics and econometrics, what I really liked about is working with the data, building some models in R, macroeconomic models. Specifically, and it was really fun. So I knew I wanted to do something with data, and back then data science wasn't really a thing, and the only job that you could find was data analytics. It was actually a lot of data science if you think about it. We were building some churn and acquisition models with decision trees. It was all in R, so yeah, it was fun. I really liked that, and then over the course of my career, I kind of transitioned into more engineering side of things because I really enjoyed that part more. I think having great colleagues really helps. So after 2 years being in analytics, I moved to another department and I had really great colleagues. I think having great colleagues inspiring each other to learn, that creates such an amazing environment that it makes you better person and better professional. So yeah, definitely that's something that helped me a lot.
Yeah, I completely agree with the colleagues matter a lot. And I know there was a study done in regards to back in the day when we used to go into the office, who you sat next to at work was a big indicator of your long-term career performance, indicating like kind of who you were close with and collaborate with could dictate your outcome, your performance, and your promotions, which I found really interesting. And also I noticed something as I grew in my career, how my priorities changed, right? So when I don't know about you, but when I started my career, it was like title and salary were important, right? And as I started to grow in my career, what became important was who I worked with and also the type of work I was doing. It sounds like you've maybe had a similar experience. What do you prioritize when you're thinking about fulfillment in your career?
Yeah, I have already more than 10 years experience in the field. And what I value the most now is type of challenges you have that you need to solve, and also freedom to solve those challenges. So there are different types of managers that you can find during your career. Fortunately, I never had anyone that was really micromanaging, maybe except a couple of situations. But overall, if I look at the managers that they had, I never had someone who was really micromanaging and checking what I was doing. So having a lot of freedom really helps me to achieve goals and create a great product. So I think that is what I value the most. And if I'm considering career switch, for example, that would be for me an important thing to look at. How much freedom do I get to do what I want to do? And how much can I define of what I'm doing myself? So, and of course, people to work with, that's another point, super important.
So you are the co-founder of Marvelous MLOps, which I love the name of this company. And I was so happy when I went to your about page. You shared that you came up with the name thanks to the help of ChatGPT, which I love even more, right? It's like, hey, why not just put it out in the open and admit it? Tell me a little bit more about why you started Marvelous MLOps and what are you guys hoping to achieve with this organization?
As I mentioned, I'm in the data and AI space for over a decade, and I accumulated a lot of experience, and especially MLOps experience, which not too many people have. I can say that I'm doing MLOps for 7 years, and I don't think many people can say that because the word MLOps didn't exist back then even. But 7 years ago, we created the first framework that allowed data scientists put on production themselves. So it was a lot about CI/CD orchestration, all the tools that data scientists usually don't use. So it was pretty much forward thinking back then. And if you look at tools that we built something very similar to MLflow, like experiment tracking system with Teradata as a backend. So because I have so much experience with it, I decided together with my colleague Bashak, we worked together, but we wanted to share what we do. So at Aqua del Hazer, where we worked together for more than 2 years, we did a lot around building a MLOps framework for the brands of the company. And a lot around Databricks, and that's something that we haven't seen anywhere in the blogs. It's just a lot of information here and there, but nothing really structured them. We've seen other customers also struggling. So that's something that we started writing about. And at some point, we just decided to create a blog and be more visible with it, except just going to the conference and going to occasional meetups. So that's how it started. And since then, every week we publish an article, and we also, so both present on LinkedIn. I think I post almost every day. I think it's been great because we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from people on how it helps them in their career. So I think that's great, just helping other people. That's what motivates us.
Yeah, I would say having, you know, almost 10 years experience is extraordinary in this field. I mean, even if you have 3 to 4 years in MLOps is something very noteworthy, but also having that much experience is incredible. And also just taking the time to be able to share that experience is really important. I'm subscribed to your Substack, and I love all the newsletters that you share. It's really, really fantastic and such a great wealth of information. And you're right, what you share is content that I don't see in other areas. So I highly would recommend that everybody go check out Marvelous MLOps, particularly if you're interested in getting in the field or if you just want to stay up to date on what is happening. It's a great resource for people. Regarding MLOps, though, I'd be curious, given just your experience and having a 10-year perspective, how have you seen the field start to evolve, particularly over the last couple of years and as AI has become so much more popular? What have been some of the key changes you've seen happen in the field, and where do you think it's going to go next?
So I think if I look at 10 years ago, large companies were only starting with doing something with data science. Actually, maybe even 8 years ago that you could see companies building their first model endpoints. Like we built fraud prediction model. It was an API and no one else could put that in production for us. So we had to invent our own way to do that. And that's what we've seen also at other companies after talking to other people, that that's approximately the same trend that they had. So 8 years ago, there were some first models, but then there is a wall between different departments. There is some software engineering that know some best practices around creating applications, but data scientists are not aware of it at all. They don't have never heard about CI/CD, never heard about orchestration monitoring. They just only know Jupyter notebooks, and that's it. So that's a wall between these two worlds. It still exists. It's getting smaller and it's getting better, but it still exists. And I think it started getting better like 2 or 3 years ago when this realization that just having data scientists, spending money on data science department doesn't help you to achieve anything. Because you need to have some streamlined processes to make it work, to integrate it with your applications, with your websites, with anything. So that's the value that the MLOps brings. But the MLOps is not just about, bringing a single application to production. It's about having a system that allows to bring any machine learning model to production fast and having all best practices around it. So, and that's why MLOps engineering now becoming very popular, especially with the whole hype around Gen AI nowadays. I think people will start thinking even more about it.
Yeah, I look at the rise in the field of MLOps as kind of just the rise in what I would call like the family of data science, right? As you mentioned, it's probably about like 8 years ago, data science really became popular. And from that, you know, a bunch of new jobs have been created. In my opinion, at first, data scientists were like, you know, creating their own visualizations and building their own models and creating their own pipelines. And then if all of that worked, they were supposed to put it to production, and then nobody knew how to do that, right? And so this new subset of job families has been created, and one of those being MLOps. And I see this as such a positive thing because it means we're moving from these POCs or MVPs to, okay, actually the model works and we need to move it into production and we need to monitor and maintain it. And so is there a best practice now in the industry of how to effectively, you know, move a model into production and monitor and maintain it? Or do you feel like we're still in the beginning stages where we're testing out different things and trying to figure out the standard? Do we have that standard today, or is that something still in progress?
Well, I still think we're in the beginning phase. I mean, compare MLOps to DevOps. DevOps is a quite mature field. And for MLOps, I think we understand what the set of practices are. But there are so many tools out there, and people just don't understand where to start because it's a mess. And I think what we need to understand that it's not about the tools, but it's about the standards, how you need to combine these tools together to get things working in a proper way. And I think it's also about educating data scientists. That's something that we start seeing, but we still need a lot. There is still a lot to be done in this field. So data scientists, they used to work in Jupyter notebooks and then they hand it over to someone. And I don't believe that it's a sustainable way of working. I believe the data scientists need to learn how to write proper code. And it doesn't mean they have to stop using Jupyter notebooks or whatever other notebook. I think it's fine. It's nice for exploration. It's nice for some experimenting. But it requires training to write code in a notebook in a certain way that it makes it faster later to production.
So if I hear you right, if you're a data scientist listening to this and you want the MLOps team to love you, hand them a .python file and not your Jupyter notebook, and they'll be much more happy. Would that be a simple way of putting it?
No, give them access to your Git repository with proper code and proper linting and everything. They will be happy then, not a Python file. But it's already better than Jupyter notebooks.
Okay, so that's phase one is the Python file. If you want to really shine, then give them access to your code repository and GitHub. I love it. I think that's great advice. Hey, if you're having trouble making friends with the MLOps team, you now have the secret code on how to make them happy, and no pun intended on code there as well. In that regard, I love that you're sharing, you know, there needs to be more education for data scientists. Do you think that it's a matter of data scientists don't know how to do it in terms of take their code and add it to a repository? Or do you think that as an organization, we've just kind of been lazy and let data scientists get away with handing over a Jupyter notebook?
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. I think it really depends on the organization. If you have relatively small teams and you don't really have the split between data scientists and machine learning engineers, data scientists are quite tech savvy and they can do it all. But you also have some research departments where data scientists actually work on just POCs that probably never meant to go to production. They're just experimenting with things. So, and these data scientists typically don't follow these best practices. So I really think it depends on the team. But ultimately, I think everyone should go that direction and doesn't have to cost more time, right?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm curious just of how we start to make progress in this space. You know, it seems like it would, one, help the timeline of moving things to production a lot faster, right? Because it seems like we need a common standard in between handoffs. And that can even be a common standard between maybe what the business analyst identifies as the problem and hands to the data scientist to build a model, and a common standard between the data pipeline that the data engineering team is building, and a common standard between what the data scientist is handing off to the MLOps, right? What I have seen, this varies quite a bit based on the company and the team that you're working for, and there's all these subcultures or subways of doing it. If you had an ideal model, what would that common standard of like handoff be between like the data engineering team to the data scientist to the MLOps individual?
So I think that we need to start with some, the way how you start your project needs to be defined. So it can be a cookie cutter, a repository where people can create a repository from. But I don't believe just a cookie cutter repository. So what I mean with it is that if you run a workflow from such a repository, it creates a repository for you, and it gives you also that repository permissions to deploy things wherever it has to be deployed. And that's a big step, because if you don't have it automated, it's in large organization, it's a complicated process to get all permissions needed. So the permissions tab between your cloud and your version control and CI/CD, it must be streamlined and must be seamless. So that already brings you to production quick. With the low world example, you just need to get to production 5 minutes. That's what I think it should be. But then this repository already structured in a certain way. It has reusable CI/CD pipelines that you can use straight away, that there are some best practices regarding linting, checks, and some testing best practices already highlighted in the cookie cutter repository. So before a data scientist hands over the model to a MLOps team, then we need to ensure that the unit tests are there, the integration tests are there, everything is running perfectly. So they need to show it to the team. And if all that is working, then it should not take much time.
So for individuals who are interested in MLOps, what does a day in the life of an MLOps engineer look like? And I know this is sometimes a hard question because every day is different. So maybe let's do a week, right? Because it's so hard to measure. Days go up and down. What does like a week of an MLOps engineer look like?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the company. But I think it's very important to highlight the difference between MLOps and machine learning engineering. So MLOps engineer actually works on a platform, on a framework that allows machine learning engineers and data scientists to bring things to production. So it means reusable infrastructure or deploying infrastructure per project. It must be seamless. So that's something that the MLOps engineers focus on. Reusable CI/CD pipelines, monitoring, that anything that is deployed also gets monitored instantly. So these are all things that the MLOps engineer is responsible for. So in that sense, MLOps engineers, customers are data scientists and machine learning engineers. And if they require a certain feature, like they want to deploy some deep learning model and require some GPUs and you don't have it yet, you need to make sure that you have that in place. Or if for a certain model, you need to have certain permissions which are different than the standard set of permissions you have, you need to ensure that that also becomes the path that is possible for your data scientists and machine learning engineers to use. So, and it requires a lot of collaboration with different teams. It's usually cloud engineering teams that provide you like the core infrastructure in large organization. There is always a set of networking rules and other rules, what you can or cannot deploy, how can you deploy things, like some tags are obligatory, as an example, for financial purposes, if you want to track the cost of your applications. So this is a concern of MLOps engineers. Another concern is indeed the needs of the data scientists and connectivity to data as well. So it's basically you're talking to everyone and to the business as well, because you need to sell what you're doing. And that's also an important piece, evangelizing to your data scientists why they need to do things a certain way, but also to the business, why what you're doing is actually effective and brings money. I did not cover the week. So basically, sort of meetings for me personally with all these individuals that I mentioned, but I'm more a lead than a MLOps engineer. So if I was more doing things hands-on, which I still do, but if I was doing it more, it would be less meetings and more implementation of these things that I mentioned.
That brings up a great question, which is, as you rise in leadership, particularly in tech, you tend to be less hands-on and more, unfortunately, in meetings. How do you still stay up to date with what you need to know in technology, but hand things off? Right? Because of course, nobody wants somebody who's a micromanager. You want to hand that off to your team. How do you kind of balance that? Hey, I work in a technical field, so I need to stay up to date. But in a leadership role, I'm less hands-on than I used to be. Where do you strike that balance?
Yeah, it's a never-ending balancing act, I think. So the problem with me, I guess, is also that I still really like doing it. So I don't think I ever want to stop doing it. So that has a couple of sides, right? So it means if you are going to, direct a VP, you would have to stop doing it at some point. So that's annoying. On the other hand, if you are moving more towards, staff engineer or that direction, I think these are two directions that you typically see, then I'm not sure how you can influence the politics in large organizations. So you're also limited in certain ways. So it's a trade-off, really, what you want for your career to be. But it doesn't have to be just these ways. There are also other roles in tech. I think like roles of developer advocates, as an example. So there are really many opportunities. You just need to think what works for you.
I love it. Great advice. I would also encourage individuals, if you are interested in getting into MLOps, Maria wrote a really great post, and it's part of Marvelous MLOps on a learning journey to become an MLOps engineer. And there's eight different things you need to learn. But why I love this so much is for each of the areas that you recommend people learn, you also share classes and books and tons of different resources. So you're not just telling people what they need to learn, you're also telling them here's some places to go and kind of the best people to be able to learn it from. So highly recommend people check that out. It's on Maria's LinkedIn profile. I know before we began the show, we were just talking about women in the space of data and AI, and particularly how we see even fewer in the job category of ML ops. Do you have any hypothesis for why that may be? I mean, we already know there's not as many women in tech, right? Not as many women in analytics or data careers, but I would say even less so in ML ops roles. And then again, in those leadership roles. Do you have any hypothesis for why we see this?
I don't know. I really don't know why this is the case. Maybe because there are not so many examples. That's why I think sharing your journey, if you're a woman in tech, in engineering or leadership positions, I think it helps other women. So that's also one of the reasons why we are doing it. I think sharing what we do with other women and just other people in general, it's very valuable. So lack of examples. Also, if I look at my own career, there were not so many women in our teams. Sometimes I was the only woman in the team. So, but I never felt weird about it. But I think I might have just been lucky with my coworkers. But it doesn't mean that everyone is lucky. So there might be different situations in other women's careers that, affected their career choices later on. That might be also one of the hypotheses.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that representation matters so much. I know that when I got started into data science, this was 2014. And so the field was fairly new. I just didn't see any other female instructors. And so that was a big reason that I agreed to teach the SQL for Data Science class on the Coursera platform, because I was like, okay, I got invited and I've never had a female instructor. So somebody has to be the first to put it out there. So I just want to say a big thank you for all of the work that you are doing in this space to get the word out in terms of the opportunity in machine learning and really just being a leader in this space. All of the content you share is fantastic and such a great resource. And I know how much time it takes to create content, and a lot of times people are doing it on the side and in their free time. So thank you so much for everything you do in this space to, one, elevate the opportunity, share information, and lead the way with representation. It's truly a pleasure to be able to speak with you and hear more about your journey and, more importantly, the work that you're doing in the space. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Now, it's also a pleasure to talk to you and see what you are doing. I think the whole Women in Data initiative is amazing. And the podcast, I really like that. So big fan.
And a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. I highly encourage everyone to follow Maria, and more importantly, go check out Marvelous ML Ops. Tons of great resources available for you, all linked in the show notes. Again, Maria, thank you for coming on today's podcast. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure for me too.
And a big thank you to our listeners. Remember to stay curious and keep learning, and we will catch you next time on the Data Bytes podcast. Bye-bye, everybody. If you are enjoying the conversations you are hearing today, we encourage you to continue to be a part of the conversation and join a community of like-minded, extraordinary women. With our free community membership, you're stepping into a realm where learning, networking, and growth are at the heart and soul of what we do. Connect with Women in Data's global community and network with our chapters all for free. But why stop there? Upgrade your membership with a special offer for Data Bytes listeners by getting $20 off a pro membership, in which you'll receive access to over 300 classes, leadership training, and exclusive events. If you're interested in mentorship and networking, we've got you. From monthly thought leadership webinars to exclusive networking events and a diverse on-demand mentorship program, the connections you'll make here are boundless. Join us and be part of a vibrant network. Dive into our book clubs, growth groups, and industry-focused gatherings. Women in Data is not just a community. It's a movement, a place where innovators, changemakers, and leaders come together to shape the future. Visit womenindata.org to join or use the special discount code in the show notes. Together, let's drive change one data byte at a time.